45 metres back. Bernard Foley.
It's got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Joined with me, as always, is co-host Lockie. Lockie, how are you this week, mate?
I'm very, very well. I'm the proud holder of the podcast play after another stirring Reds victory, so I'm on cloud nine, mate. But it's not just the two of us in the box seat this week. Mitch, can you give a special intro to a very special guest for us?
That's right. We have a very, very special guest joining us for a very... It's been a very long time since we've had this person on the podcast. Oh, Mr. Mark Anderson, Ando, back on the podcast. Now, Ando, we did say on your last appearance that you would be joining us once the Wallabies won back the Bledisloe Cup. As far as I'm aware, we haven't won that yet. Have we?
Well, today it was announced that Joe Schmidt had brought a few players into kind of like a pre-Wallabies camp training squad. And with the news that Curly Beale was back in the Wallabies contention, I thought the Bledisloe is as good as done in our favour. So I may as well come back on a pod. Yep.
Woohoo! How have you been? How's the last few weeks treated you?
Mate, life has been incredibly hectic, but incredibly good. As much as it's kind of hard to say, I have enjoyed the opportunity just to kind of like sit back a little bit from the rugby world and just be a fan without needing to do kind of all the stuff that we do behind the scenes for Pick and Drive. So it's been really, really restful in that way. But started a new job this year, well, late last year, and all the health stuff from early this year is cleared up. So it's life is good. Life is good. So very keen to kind of jump on the pod now and then over the kind of coming international season and finals period and just chat some rugby when and where it works.
Fantastic. Now, we did, Lockie, you did mention in the intro that we had the Interpodcast Shield up for grabs this week with the Reds taking on the Waratahs in Sydney. Before we get too much further into the podcast, I have to ask you, as a Queensland Reds fan, you must be excited or happy that you got the win, but were you nervous that it was only by a point against a team come dead last, who up until that point in the competition was the only ones that hadn't qualified or couldn't qualify for finals?
No, I think that's perfect prep for the quarters, actually. There's no such thing as an easy Queensland-New South Wales game. I think we've seen enough games between the two over the years to know that it means more to them than we can possibly imagine on paper and in preview and review. So it was really great to see that comeback in the second half from the Tars, and it took a hell of a kick from Tom Liner to win it, and then Jack Bowen had the chance to do the same as well. And given what we saw from him in the game, I think that's going to be a really good 10 matchup for a few years to come. So plenty of positives out of it. But tell you what, the cabinet's getting full up here, gents. You need to come and pinch a few back.
Well, what we're doing tonight, we do have some news that broke last week, and that is one of the reasons that Ando is here to talk about the decision that Melbourne Rebels will not be continuing in the competition past 2024. So we'll focus on that first up. We'll then look at some of the results from the last round of Super Rugby Pacific 2024, and then we'll preview the upcoming quarterfinals, which is very, very closely approaching, which is very exciting. Now, before we do dive into the rugby content, we have had our tipping comp run throughout the season. Now, at the point of recording, I'm pretty sure the tipping platform that we use doesn't allow us to run through into finals. So it means that we can announce the winner for the Pick and Drive tipping comp for 2024. And he's been up the top for most of the season, but well done to Nick W or Wilson's Warriors. He's taken up first place, 68 points. Well done to Nick. Followed very, very closely by Pearson C or Big Boys in second place on 66 points. And Anthony 1 or Anthony R also on 66 points, but with a less points margin differential there in third place. So well done to everyone who's contributed to the tipping throughout the season. Very tight contest up until the end, but Nick was the front runner for most of the season. So big shout out to him. Now, boys, I think we've done enough of the intro. Shall we just dive into the content for this evening?
There is one thing I need to say before we move on, okay? So you guys have been, Lockie's been talking through this whole like, oh yeah, check out the trophy cabinet and stuff like a tool. But we've just forgotten to mention the fact that out of the three of us, who won a tipping competition? Me. Okay. Ooh. So I cracked the top 100 and came in 99th. And on a more serious note, we also do need to mention that the women's sevens team are going to be front and center of a lot of what we talk about coming up soon. So don't forget that we're going to be talking them
up. Oh, yes, of course. I forgot to include that. Whoops. But that is on the run sheet, so we will cover it.
All good. Back to you, my friend.
All right, let's get into the news that has broke. I think it broke last week. Anyone got a day, shoot it out at me. But the news has come that Rugby Australia has announced that the Melbourne Rebels will not be participating in Super Rugby Pacific past 2024. This means that this last week, this coming weekend, could be their last game in Super Rugby Pacific, pending how they go in the quarterfinals and how deep into the competition they do travel. Ando, you've joined us specifically to chat through this. What's your immediate thoughts around the decision? And yeah, it's a pretty big one.
Yeah, it is a pretty big one. Look, my immediate response was it's the right decision to be making with the current financial situation that Australian rugby finds itself in. It is the fiscally prudent option for RA to be going down. But that doesn't take away from the human element of the whole situation. And we do need to be thinking about all the Rebels, the players, the staff, those who have moved down to Melbourne or live in Melbourne, maybe those who have young families, or the situations mean that their work isn't easily transferable. There's a human dimension to this that when we get into talking about the details of the consortium's bid and the like, which we will soon, we do just need to take a moment and pause and think about the people that are losing their jobs, and many of whom are just diehard rugby fans who are having a team that they've loved and supported, which are just not going to exist anymore.
I think that's the most striking element of this ordeal, which is, yeah, what it has been. I think we can be pretty blunt about that. And seeing the human element repeat itself again after 2017 has been quite jarring for a lot of Australian rugby spectators, a lot of players, a lot of fans. And I think Ando's hit the nail on the head there where the human element must come first. But I think it's really important to just get a bit of background so those people listening can take a little bit of the emotion out and we can look at it with a pretty clean pair of eyes now. So just to recap quickly, team, the decision came to light Thursday last week. So that was Thursday, the 30th of May. An announcement was put forward and the Super Rugby side, operating as Melbourne Rebels Rugby Union, was informed by Rugby Australia that it will not be competing in the 2025 season. So there's a big statement that Rugby Australia put out. Rebels released their own as well. And I'd encourage everyone to go and read them in full if you haven't already. But the key lines out of the Rugby Australia press release were as follows. The application from the Rebels consortium hoping to take over was unsuccessful because it did not demonstrate sufficient financial viability. That was the primary rationale. And to cover that, Rugby Australia noted that Melbourne have been in voluntary administration since January, with debts owing to creditors in excess of $23 million, which includes an $11.5 million debt to the tax office. So at that point, Rugby Australia cut staff, reinstated to the tune of, I believe, around 85%, and took over player and coaching payments for the season while the Rebels had to hand back their competition license. So this has been playing out publicly for almost 5 months now. There's been an extended period of time. We got your initial reaction to this, Ando, and you made the decision and the call that that was the financially sensible and practical decision. Can you talk to me a bit about, as an Australian rugby fan, the impact of seeing another team go in the space of less than 8 years now? What does that actually mean to you as a rugby fan and spectator to see a team put aside?
Look, I think what it does is it highlights the shambolic governance that Australian rugby has been under for a long period of time, and how there's been very, maybe that phrase is a bit harsh, but a better descriptor might be the lack of unity or people pulling in the same direction for the great game of rugby that we love in Australia. And so if you cast your minds back to 2017, when the question essentially was the Force or the Rebels, which were going to be leaving for a whole host of reasons, there were bitter divisions and rivalries then where people, even now, today, still struggle to kind of forgive or think positively about RA for the decisions that were made then. And having yet another team cut, I mean, I'm one of the few diehard fans of rugby in my team at work, and I'm in a location where it should be prominent, where rugby union should be the talked about thing and everybody knows it in detail. And most people didn't even know that it had happened, and those that heard it just said, yep, unsurprising, not surprised at all, rugby's going down the drain. And so it's just sad to me that that's the state that Australian rugby's in, that a team getting cut just fits the narrative of what Australian rugby has been for the last decade. So it's just really hard to take from that perspective.
Mitch Ando says it's the fiscally responsible decision. Does that mean it's still the right one on a human element, which we touched upon earlier? Is this the right decision in your mind?
That's a tough question. From the human element, it's always tough to think of the amount of people that a decision like this impacts, whether it's the direct players, whether it's coaches, whether it's physios, whether it's the media team, whether it's the sales team, the membership team. Like, there's so many people that this impacts on, and and the fans as well. Like, the fans, there's some incredible Melbourne Rebels fans who have been championing the cause of the Rebels this season through X, through our own pick and drive Discord server, every possible platform that they can. They're out there trying to keep the Rebels sort of dream alive. But there's no way, the way that this situation unfolded, that the Rebels could have continued. The debt that they had accrued, just the ill management that the board had sort of operated on for so long, unless Rugby Australia took responsibility and took it all in-house and ran the Melbourne Rebels, there was no other feasible way that this decision was going to come out. And I just can't see Rugby Australia taking that responsibility onto their shoulders and bailing them out of that situation. It was just too deep at the end of the day. Having five teams is probably where we need to be in such a competitive market in terms of sport coverage, with the NRL, with the AFL, with the A-League, with cricket. Having four teams next year, I think, is really going to push us as a product to stay relevant in the market.
And that's an element that isn't often touched upon. People talk about where players go, what happens to the footprint in Victoria, but the commercial aspect as well is a massive detail, and it ties into the money. And I know you've got a point that you'd like to raise about the debt itself, if you want to take over.
Yeah, look, thanks, Lockie. I think it's really important to recognise, as I'm pretty sure most Australian rugby fans do, the pretty precarious financial situation that we are in currently, due to some mismanagement, due to impacts of COVID, and due to just the sporting landscape in Australia as well. Rugby Australia just isn't flush with funds. And in 2017, when RA purchased the licence of the Melbourne Rebels for, I believe, $1, back from the private owners at the time, they spent $13.8 million covering the debts of the Rebels in 2017, and then provided an additional $6 million in funding above and beyond the regular contributions that all the Super Rugby clubs were receiving. Now, since 2017, the club has accrued $23 million of debt. $23 million of debt in 6 years. And there's probably more to the story. There's probably some justification from the Melbourne Rebels directors as to how this situation occurred. But the fact that after being $13.8 million in debt, receiving $6 million extra funding beyond what they already received from the broadcast deals and the governing body, they then find themselves 6 years later in $23 million further of debt, to me, just speaks of incompetency might be harsh. People simply not doing the right things in roles and responsibilities that they have to govern in a financially and fiscally responsible way. And RA is clearly winning the media battle at this point in terms of responsibility for this, because the way that I'm seeing things at this point, and we haven't heard much from the directors themselves as to how they got into this situation, but it just seems that things are really looking pretty bad for the responsibility of the directors for getting the Rebels into this position.
Mitch, a final word on the Rebels situation. We've seen already talk in the media sway itself towards a looming court battle. And Rugby Australia Chair Daniel Herbert touched on this in some comments earlier in the week, saying that every dollar spent in a legal battle is a dollar away from the community game. That's a pretty powerful line to lean on.
Mm.
What do you see the impact of a court case towards Australia in what's been dubbed the golden decade? I mean, how damaging would it be for the code for this to play out?
Yeah, I think it's something that we definitely do not need in our game at the moment. And a point that Ando just made there around Rugby Australia sort of coming out and currently winning the media battle between the directors or the consortium and RA. I think for the general fan, like you said before, Ando, to your scenario at work, just the general sporting fan in Australia just looks at this as RA stuffed up. They just go, oh, the Rebels have folded because RA can't run a fifth license. They don't know the details. They don't know that RA isn't actually the one that isn't responsible here. So it's already a bad look. And then to hear for just the general fan, rugby, just the general sporting fan to read in the newspaper that RA is going to court with the Melbourne Rebels and people are trying to stay within the, get some kind of recompense or whatever it ends up being, is just not a good look. And it's not going to paint Rugby Australia in a good way either way. This could loom for, who knows, years potentially, if it continues to keep being fought and fought and fought. Where the money comes from eventually, we don't know. But it's not going to put, ultimately, it's not a good look for Australian rugby. It's not a good outcome. There's no good outcome here. And hopefully that the directors or the people responsible for getting the Rebels into this situation realize that they're not going to do any good by consistently pursuing RA and just remove the charges against them.
And when we consider more the ongoing impacts, you've got to think, where's that money going to come from? Areas of the game that are not direct profit generating, revenue generating vehicles for the game. And what are those? Well, it's community investment, it's women's rugby, it is junior pathways. It's all of those elements of the game which are longer term, strategically important things for the game of rugby in Australia. But there's just not going to be the money for them if legal battles are taking up the available cash that RA have. And so I'm really worried that if there are ongoing legal disputes into the future, then I would hate to see the investment in women's rugby either get rolled back a little bit or at the very least not expanded in a way that it should be. I'd hate to see the planned investment into community rugby and junior pathways not come to fruition. There's so much opportunity for growth next year with the Lions. Like, the Lions are coming next year. I would love them if that is... I would love next year to be the beginning of a new narrative and the beginning of a new story within Australian rugby. And I just worry that these legal cases are going to overshadow what should be a year of celebration of the love of rugby and how bloody good it's going to be to have the Lions on Australian shores.
Mm. I totally agree. And there's already been some discussion around, is that game shifted to an Australia A fixture? Could it be a reiteration of the Anzac match that we're going to see in Adelaide? So there's huge opportunity to be considered there. And also, we haven't touched upon it, but what is the future of the Rebels women? There's a lifeline that's been thrown to them, which is really exciting from both a personal and a broadcast perspective to see that club and team survive.
No doubt there will be a rebrand, though.
Oh, they'll have to be of some description, but it's going to be...
They won't be the Rebel women anymore.
We'll have to see how it plays out. But we do have a couple of questions before we move away from the Rebels chat, because it obviously has been the topic of the week. I'll ask the first one. Hugh T, a regular. Why did we ever think we could support five teams from a high-performance perspective in Super Rugby? And I'll throw that one to you, Matt.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure if we ever did or if there was enough understanding and data and research into what high-performance systems required to be successful. And I think that the decision to expand out particularly to the Force was a commercial decision. It was about trying to enlarge the footprint of rugby within Australia, and it didn't necessarily align with high performance achievement. And so the work that obviously Benny Darwin and Gainine Analytics have been doing seems to suggest that narrowing of pathways is actually the best thing for high performance. So I think it's just misplaced goals or different goals governing the decision for expansion.
I would argue that we do have the talent for five teams in a high-performance environment. We just don't have a high-performance system set up to support it. You look at the players that have come through since through the systems and through the pathway since we've had both the Rebels and the Force together. We've got Rob Liotta. We've got heaps of talent that's come through. Carter Gordon. All of these players who, if either the Force or the Rebels don't exist, they're most likely going to, then they're vying for very limited spaces within a very competitive sporting market. And so we then end up losing that talent across to the NRL, the AFL, gridiron now, NFL is becoming another option that's poaching talent. So I would argue that we have the talent to support the five teams. And if we went back to five, I think we could make it work. We just need to get our high performance system streamlined. That's what's letting us down at the moment.
And we're already seeing a lot of deliberation and maybe behind closed doors about where players from the Rebels should or could end up. So I'm sure that's going to play out for much, much longer across the end of this Super Rugby season. But our second question is from another favourite friend, Joe Hoey, Mr. Joey from down in the Canberra Times. Looking forward, with an 11-team comp orbit guaranteed for next year, what structure would you like to see Super Rugby played in? So, Mitch, I'll throw to you, but I reckon that includes what the regular season and the finals structure looks like.
I think we need to expand to full home and away. That makes, 10 or 20 rounds if you've got buys in there as well. That's not too much rugby. We're talking about how our players aren't playing enough. So I'd be seeing that. The final series, I'm still not 100% sold on. Like, I know a lot of people are saying that they don't like the 8-team format, but I'm a big supporter of it purely for the fact that we go into the last round of the season for the last two seasons and we don't know who's 1, we don't know who's 4, we don't know who's 6, we don't know who's 8. And so it meant that there's, other than the Waratahs, there's really 11 teams up for competition for spots, and that makes it exciting, and that makes it, as a fan, you want to tune into the final few weeks. If you've only got a top 4 or a top 6, it means that come, 2 to 3 weeks from the end of the season, teams are just so far down on the table, they're not a mathematical chance, and so they switch off, they stop, they rest players, they don't become competitive, and then we see scores blow out. So I'm not really sure yet where I sit, whether I want to see a 6 or a top 4. Yeah, Ando, any thoughts on how you would like to see the sort of the final structure play out?
Look, I'm pretty happy with the top 8 because it does provide teams with an opportunity to maybe get some more gate revenue and the like, which is genuinely important within our landscape. If you weren't going to do that, you go top 6 and then have a bye week for the top 2. Make it pretty simple like that.
I don't think you can go top 8 though with 11 and the 3 teams miss out.
yeah, I know that's getting pretty ridiculous, isn't it? It's already stupid with 12. Yeah. So maybe top 6 and top 2 have a bye week.
Yeah.
And our last question from the one and only Rev. We touched on a little earlier with a few ideas, but what fixture is the best replacement for the Rebels match against the Lions next year at Marvel Stadium? Ando, first dibs.
First dibs, Aussie or a like combined Islander team, I think it'd be pretty sweet, but Australia would need to take the lion's share of the gate receipts.
And Mitch?
I'd go with the Anzac 15. Make it a 2-test series, get a cool trophy made up. The other thought that's been bandied around online is Australia A is most likely to get it. In my mind, this Anzac 15 is Australia A with the Japanese-based All Blacks who aren't getting selected for the All Blacks at that time. So you've got Beauden Barrett, you've got Sam Kane,
Mwanga.
Like, you've got a few players that you can inject there. I think also if we give the Kiwis an opportunity to play two tests in this combined ANZAC, it probably makes it a little bit more worthwhile or likely that they'll return the fixture when they host the Lions next time and maybe invite some of our Aussies over to be in a combined series. If we make history, make it a bit more of a one-off test, two tests, have a trophy for it, and move on that tradition.
There's certainly a few options floating around there. I don't know if the Kiwis would invite us back. They seem like the kind of bunch who'd take advantage and then say, oh, thanks, we'll tour South Africa in a few years, catch you in the rugby championship. But I think that'll probably leave our Rebels chat for now. It's a developing story. Obviously, the Rebels still alive and kicking in finals, which we'll touch on in a tick. But our hearts, I think, collectively do go out to those involved in the Rebels setup, especially players, support staff, fans, doesn't matter what side of it on. That human element remains. So, yeah, thinking of you down in Melbourne. Mitch, still
the biggest
mate.
Player as well that's really got to be this news has to be hitting home really hard is Ryan Lowrens. Ryan Lowrens was part of the Force in 2017 when they folded. He then went over to, I don't know off the top of my head which team it was in the MLR, but they also folded when he was there. He's come back to the Rebels and they have also folded. So three teams have folded. That's devastating. And as Lockie has just pointed out in our chat as well, Kevin Foote was coach at Western Force when they folded, was coach at the Rebels now, and will be the coach of the Waratahs when they fold in 3 years' time as well.
Same with Sampson.
Not the folding, the Tars, bless them.
Let's keep things moving. We've spoken about the Rebels, as disappointing and sad and glum as that news is. Let's get a little bit positive. Let's get upbeat. The Sevens women's team are world champions. They have taken out the series in Madrid. Lockie, how good does it feel to have our girls on top yet again?
Oh, some good news. Oh, it was honestly, I felt so sad chatting through that Rebel stuff. And we get to talk about the Aussie Sevens girls, and it's like the weight has been lifted. We got treated to two of the best elimination, playoff, knockout games, whatever you want to call them, overnight, Saturday to Sunday, beating the Kiwis, beating the French. The girls are back where they belong, and that's with a gold medal around their neck. Can we talk about Tia Hines? The one only sharpshooter. Ando, I can't even begin to describe my excitement for this. You're going to have to take over, but we might have a new sharpshooter in the Australian rugby system.
Oh. And maybe we do. And I think what's incredibly exciting about that is it's genuinely a point of difference within women's sevens rugby. It's because of the dropkick nature of it. It's really difficult to get the conversions. And yet her conversion to seal the match was just incredible. I watched it on delay. Well, obviously, because it was like 3 a.m. this morning, Sydney time. And watched it this morning with the kids both around me, the dog kind of next to me on the couch, just cheering, going nuts as we watched the conversion go over. Absolutely incredible. And it was a bit of an odd one because, I mean, start of the game, ball didn't go 10. And so France get the restart off Tia Hines' kickoff. And it just made me go, oh, is this a sign of things to come? In terms of us having to, with Maddie Ashby's injury, kind of account for some of our players who are out with long-term injuries or will only just be getting back for the Olympics. But man, did Tia prove us wrong? Able to seal that clutch kick, but also throughout the game, doing the playmaking role that is so important to allow players like your Maddie Levi's and your Charlotte Kaslicks just to have their own moments of brilliance and shine. You need someone to pull the strings in the middle, allowing them to do their magic, and that was Tia Hines within this match.
Massively. Two huge roles across the semi-final, the final. She's really stepped into that. We also saw players stepping up in the absence of Shani Smale was on the sidelines. Maddie Ashby, as you mentioned, out of the picture. Seeing BB Tarita back, Mitch, another point of difference. She offers so much strength as well as pace out on the wings. Throw in your Maddie Levi's, your Bella Nattis's, your Caitlin Shades. There's a really physical element to the Aussie girls we probably haven't seen over the past few years that's coming back.
Yeah, just focusing on that semi-final, I think it was, against New Zealand, that game, just across the board, every player just put in a Herculean performance, just incredible. Charlotte Kazlik went down with that hit and they ran away and scored. And at that point, it led it away to two scores. New Zealand got in front. At that point, sort of Charlotte came to the sideline. I thought, this might be it. This is over. She's our, you know, our leader, the person that we need on the field to get those wins. And luckily, she wasn't injured. She came back at the end there and she was pivotal in getting us over the line to win the game. Such an incredible leader, just a role model in this team for both the girls and just young supporters of Sevens and of rugby in general can look at this team, look at Charlotte Kazlik and just think how incredible she is, to see how she's just consistently winning us games and having massive clutch involvements at key moments. It was a very nail-biting series for the girls. So glad that they got the win at the end there and got to hold up the trophy. I think the biggest takeaway for me from this is that this is the perfect setup for the Paris Olympics in a few weeks. Like, they went deep against New Zealand. They took it really, really low. Two scores, clawed the win back, got that. And then to go up against a really physical French team in the final and come out on top there, like Tim Sampson, the coach. Tim Walsh has got this team just pumping at the right time. And they have to be confident going into this Olympics as one of the key favourites to get a medal.
It is just terrific to see. We saw in the wake of the final, lots of plaudits coming the Australians way. Maddie Levi finishes with a record try-scoring season. I think she finished with almost 70 at the end of there, breaking her record from the previous season. Also runs away with Player of the Year. Caitlin Shave nominated for Rookie of the Year. I haven't seen whether that's been made official yet. But the flip side of it as well is in the men's. And we saw our boys finish seventh in the grand final series. So they did make it to that top point, which was great to see. They got a couple of wins over Great Britain. But plenty of work for the Aussie men if they're to come up against a really, really competitive field. Now that France are world beaters with the addition of one player. Ando, what do we do to stop DuPont? How is he this good at two codes of the game?
Look, I just think there needs to be an alley somewhere with somebody with a truncheon to the knee. That seems to be like the option. Because he's that good. You can't take him out on a rugby field. He seems to just be able to inject himself across any body format. Yeah, I won't go into it in too much detail from a 15s perspective, because I think it has been shown that you can neutralize him in 15s, but in 7s, just with the extra space that you have and with the incredible players that France has in and around him, they're just incredible.
There's a seriously stacked field, that men's one. I think we can probably assume that it's a two-horse race in the Olympic women's side, but the men's, the field is wide open, so... We're less than 50 days away from the Olympics starting now. So it's really heating up. If you're not into your sevens, do yourself a favor, get into it. It's a spectacular form of the game. And we can't wait to see it tick, tick, tick down to a couple of Aussie golds. Really looking forward to that. But we've done our Rebels. We've done our sevens. Mitch, I think it's time for a bit of good old fashioned Super Rugby Pacific.
Super Rugby Pacific Round 15. It was the last round of the regular season for 2024. The last time you will see the Waratahs in the competition as it currently sits. They took on or hosted the Queensland Reds on Friday night. Final score in this one was 26-27 to the Queensland Reds. It was 19-0 to the Reds at halftime. The Waratahs clawed that lead back in the second half, got ahead late, and then the Reds and Tom Liner kicked a massive penalty from halfway to get 1 point up. Lockie, you've, as we sort of said in the intro, you were happy that the Reds managed to win this one, but overall, do you think that this was a good performance from the men from Queensland?
No, far from our best. Far from our best. I think it's a good reality check ahead of a quarterfinal over in New Zealand. If we'd lost that game, I'd probably feel the same as winning it, to be honest. We saw how good the Reds can be in the first half. Three quick tries, some brilliant back line into play, especially to set up the Josh Fluke try from the other side of halfway was really sharp.
Incredible.
The flip side is how badly they switched off in the second half. Defensive misreads like players biting in for the lovely Jack Bowen ball to Holloway to put the big fella away. You know, he's basically running on quicksand, but because the Reds were so poorly out of position, he goes over untouched. So there are deficiencies still with our defensive play. And a team like the Chiefs will exploit that a lot better than a severely undermanned Waratahs outfit. So I was really pleased to see the Tars push back into it. I'm really impressed with Jack Bowen. I know that we're quick to anoint saviours, especially in the fly half department, but I saw plenty of good stuff from him to be excited about, and I think Tars fans should be as well.
Yeah, except for his first conversion miss. That was diabolical. But outside of that, can I just say the Reds are like one of the most annoying teams in Australian rugby to follow or to like support. I want the Reds to do well. I like so many of their players. But for so many games this season, and Lockie, you'll need to defend them and tell me why I'm wrong, but they've just had these moments of absolute brilliance. Like that fluke try in the first half was, it had me at the pub on Friday night genuinely clapping them whilst wearing my Tars gear thinking that was a beautiful try. Like, well done. That was excellent. And then they switch off and let the worst team in Super Rugby in 2024 come back in and nearly steal the game. Like, how do you do that? No team that has genuine finals aspirations should be doing that. And yet it's something that I feel, and maybe it's just my bias against the Reds because of Tars supporting. I just feel that they're guilty of doing that too often and that they still haven't got that consistency to live up to the quality of players that they have across their team.
It's a pretty harsh assessment, but you're accurate in the sense that the Reds match up their opposition's energy, right? Like we've seen it time and time again. Reds will play down to a team below them and play up to a team above them. There's also a reason why the Reds have lost so many tight games against really, really good opponents, think the Canes and the Blues after the Siren, but then will absolutely shit the bed over in Perth and give up four tries early to a Force team that wasn't much chop at the time, or switch off in the second half against the Tars. Over in Moana, who have finished up 11th and they coughed up a game over there in the last minute that they should have won. So the Reds' problem is that they match their opponent. They need to set their own tempo for them to be a successful long-term team. And that's what makes their matchup with the Chiefs so interesting, because they, they have a similar style of play and a similar energy, and that's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. But you're right, the Reds are horribly frustrating to follow. They always have been.
Just jumping into that point, I think one of the interesting takeaways from this game was, and on reflection, it's probably a tactical issue that Les Kiss won't maybe do again, was the decision to swap Tom Liner or bring Tom Liner on for Lawson Crichton in the 48th minute. At that point, the Reds were up 19-5. And whereas 19-5 isn't enough to kind of put the pool cue away and to just cruise yourself home, it's enough of a gap to probably expect that Tom Liner is going to come in and have a good impact and see the game through. He had some good involvements, but I think the change that it made in just the way that the Reds structurally looked in defense was probably the area that allowed the Waratahs back into the game. And you could tell that Darren Coleman, once the Waratahs got on that roll, wasn't going to do the same thing and didn't bring on Tane Edmed, who was on the bench, who at multiple times, you could see it as someone who was at the game, you could see he was on the sideline warming up, taking the bib off, about to come on, and then the call came down that, no, we're not going to put him on, so Bowen's doing well. So I think the decision to change your playmaker halfway through the second half is probably what saw a bit of the momentum shift back in the Waratahs' favour. And obviously, they're playing at home, the Waratahs, last game of the year. Darren Coleman, from all reports, gave them an absolute uppercut at halftime and got into them something severe in the sheds. And so they came out and sort of woke up and ran home late. As Lockie was saying, I don't know, as a Reds fan, if you'd be too worried from this performance. They know what they need to do now, going across the ditch to play the Chiefs. And we've seen how they performed against them earlier in the season. The fact that they are a team that does play low or up depending on their opposition probably gives a little bit of a little bit of hope that they will show up in the quarterfinals next week. Anything else to say on this one, boys?
No, I reckon it's time to steer across to La Toka where we saw
Latoka. The Fiji drew a hosting the Melbourne Rebels for the last time in a regular season game of Super Rugby Pacific. 40-19 was the final score in this one to the Drua. Now, the score at halftime was 19-all with the Melbourne Rebels scoring late to lock things up at halftime. But in that second half, the Rebels, the Drua came out and just put an absolute clinic on the Rebels. Ando, you're sitting here in a Rebel shirt, so you're going to be the one that has to talk up the Rebels this week. How did you think that first 40 performance sort of paled in comparison to that second 40?
Oh, look, it's don't you love it when a match actually becomes like the Tiles Reds, a game of two halves, so you can just bring out that most cliched commentator saying ever. So very, very much enjoy that. I think, look, this was going to be a really hard game for Kevin Foot and Samson to get the boys up for, considering what had just broken. I think it was the day before they flew out. So they were called into the meeting about the future of the Rebels at 10 a.m. And then they flew out. They had to get ready to fly out a couple of hours later, and so it was always going to be hard.
And I heard some whispers that there was real chats going around that room of not getting on that flight and forfeiting this game. So the fact that the boys did stick to their commitments and did go is probably a big kudos to the leadership of that group.
And that kind of often speaks to the second half fadeaways where players can get up for the first half of a match and they can compete, but then whatever maybe challenges they're struggling with from a mental resilience perspective come in, that's where the second half in a very boisterous Fijian crowd up against a pretty pumped home team can come into play. I think one of the things that we do need to take away is how bloody good Taniela Tupou is when he's on song. Because the Rebels scrum was dominant and he was the Rebels scrum. And so one of the key things that RA need to do in the wash up of everything happening down at the Rebels is make sure that he is in a quality Australian team moving forward. And you think it's either going to be, when I say quality, the players on either side of him, if he'd were to come to the Tars, that would be really important, because if Dave Parecki and Angus Bell are both fit, then that's essentially the Wallabies front row right there. Like, so genuinely, that's important. But then I actually was thinking as well, Reds, would he consider going back to the Reds? Because he's got the family connections, he knows the setup, Brad Thorne's not there anymore. You just wonder if things would be different.
Yeah, it's an interesting one with Nella. I guess, oh God, there's a whole episode really in, you know, who goes where. I don't know if I'm quite ready to rip that band-aid off with the Rebels still alive and kicking. So I think we're going to spare them that.
Look, yeah, we'll ask you one question before we move off this game. And that is, have you seen a player get so angry or fired up against their own or their old club as Frank Lomani does every time he plays the Rebels? He was on a mission again this week.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty lucky to avoid the sin bin for that high shot. It looked to me like no rap. High. There was the account for Rob Leota dipping, and that's a valid mitigating factor, but he certainly has a way of spicing things up in a Drua v Rebels clash. I think Ando has made some really strong points around the emotion leading to that second half fadeaway, but also the Drua weren't a finals guarantee. They had to win this game. And, you know, that coupled with Melbourne travelling and their situation, I don't think we were ever going to see the Rebels hang on. Seeing Rebels some underscore within 60 seconds after halftime open the floodgates for, I think, a 4-0 second half. And they were sublime, actually. The Fijians had really, really good moments. Yeah. And there, in my opinion, is not a better 13 in the competition than Yusefa Marcy. He is absolutely untouchable, especially right to left. He's just got a brilliant ability to get the ball free, and I'd be scared seeing him in a test, if we're honest.
Now, a little bit of news that has broken the past few weeks that we haven't focused yet on from the Drua is Mick Byrne will take over as the Fijian head coach at the end of the season, and that means that Glenn Jackson, former player, former referee, and now coach, will be taking charge of the Drua next season, which will be really interesting to see how that transition goes. I can't recall any other super rugby referee coaching a team as the head coach. That's going to be really interesting to see what impact he has for the boys over there. Let's move on to the last game of the round for the Australians, which was the Western Force hosting the Brumbies. 24-19 was the final score in this one. Lockie, I'll throw to you first in this one. The score kind of flatters the Western Force a little bit, considering they scored after the final siren. But the Brumbies, will they be happy with this performance, particularly the outcome of what it means moving forward into the quarterfinals next week?
I think they're as happy as they can be, because the results prior with the Hurricanes and Blues both getting wins meant that the Brumbies couldn't finish any higher than third. So their bed was already kind of made. They just had to go lie in it. If lie in it means getting a win over the Force in Perth, which is still pretty tough. So to see them go across and do a job, it's almost a bit like the Reds beating the Tars in Sydney, right? You're a team that's expected to win on the road against a rival. And if you do it, then everyone just shrugs and says, you were supposed to. I think that kind of belies how tough that game was physically. The Force were up for it. They, I thought, dominated the collision areas for most of the game. But the class of the Brumbies' outside backs was ultimately what got them through. Just in those little clutch moments, the really tense forward battle. But yeah, seeing the way that Corey Toole was able to move into space, get on the outside and draw two for Tom Wright. Just those little game-breaking moments where you say, geez, the Brumbies are good. It pains me to admit, but the Brumbies are so sharp, especially on the counter now. And seeing those elements of their game come through makes me more confident in their ability to not just get through a quarterfinal, but to go deep.
Ando, Lockie and I, in the past few weeks, have been speaking up Tom Wright as the player to lose the Wallabies 15 jersey at the moment.
Mm.
With the combination that he is very, very quickly building with Corey Toole on that wing, two tries this week and both of them just looking absolutely in sync, like they've got a touch at the hip. Does that bolster Corey Toole into a Wallabies bolter for you, potentially into a wing starting jersey to complement Tom Wright later in the season?
Yeah, I think so. I think he is just one of those players that you just kind of want to see what he can do in the Wallabies gold. And he is just so exciting that you just want to watch him. I think that would mean you'd need someone pretty pretty dependable, like a Kellaway in the other wing position.
Or a Corabetti.
So, yeah, if he's an option, I'm just not too sure what the overseas options will be. But for now, you'd probably be wanting more. Even if Corabetti was available, you'd almost want more of that dependable defensive player like Kellaway can be. Mm. Someone who you know is just going to be in the right place at the right time and do what needs to get done the vast majority of the time. One of the pretty big concerns that the Brumbies have coming out of this match, though, is the injury to Blake Shopp. Mm. So he'd only just come back from a pretty significant shoulder injury. And then was only, 5 minutes in and then did it again and is really, really, it looks serious. And with James Slipper still having a calf strain, it's going to be pretty challenging to see whether or not Slipper will be available. And what does that leave? Harry Vela playing a full game or something like that against the Highlanders? So, yeah, it's a pretty challenging situation for them. But either way, I'm confident that, yeah, Corey Toole should be in the Wallaby setup. May not be in the first match day 23, but definitely in the picture.
And Lockie, we saw halfway through this, the first half, Ryan Lonergan, Ando's number one crush in the Brumbies, goes off for a yellow card, and we see Noel Alessio shift into nine. Is that something that could potentially be pulled out later in the season by Joe Schmidt if we get an injury in the likes of Nick White or Ryan Lonergan or whoever the scrum half at the time is go down? He's shown that he was pretty handy there at scrum half.
I always wonder how much preparation or planning goes into yellow card adjustment, because we see so many cards in the modern game. It's just the way that it's refereed and the changes around player safety. So, you know, who's learning to throw in a line out? I remember Michael Hooper having a tough time a few years back trying to get that right. And yeah, Noah seemed to have some good moments. I think typically you have almost a halfback wing cover role. That was pioneered by the Springboks back in the early noughties with the Francois Holgards of the world and things like that. So There's so many ways that you can address and attack those. I think what the Brumbies did well was win ugly. It's becoming very much their brand, is being able to win when you don't expect them to and when it doesn't look so great. And I think they just did what they needed to. So all eyes will be turned on their home quarterfinal, which will be prime time. It's our one Australian quarterfinal this year, but we do have three to chew through, which I'm pretty excited for. So do you want to get us started, Ando?
Well, before we get into the finals, there were a few other games that did happen. So we will acknowledge that there is some Kiwis in the competition.
Kiwis,
so
boo.
Crusaders 43-10 over Moana Pacifica, Hurricanes 41-14 over the Highlanders, and 31-17 the Blues over the Chiefs. So if you're interested in any of those results, you can find the replays or the minis on Stan Sport. But let's get into the finals. And the first matchup of Super Rugby Pacific 2024 quarterfinals is the Chiefs hosting the Reds, 7:05 p.m. local time, which is 5:05 p.m. Sydney time or Brisbane time on Friday afternoon. Lockie, how are you feeling coming into this one? Are you feeling confident? Do the Reds have the gameplay and the style to upset the Chiefs at home?
I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous about this one. The recent history between the two teams suggests that it will be a really tight encounter, probably in the realm of 6 to 4 point margin, with both teams scoring 3 to 4 tries. It'll be entertaining. They're based on strong set piece up front, quick rucks driven by your back row, and really silky outside backs. So I have no idea how it's going to play out. It's by far the most evenly matched, I think, of the quarterfinals, as befits a 4v5. And you could flip a coin and pick from there. I really don't know who's going to get up. Heart and mouth stuff for me. I really hope it's the Reds, but I don't think you can tip against the Chiefs in Hamilton, where they have been so strong for such a long period of time. So you're going to have to do the tipping for me, boys. I can't bring myself to say it.
Ando, does Les Kiss have you dreaming or believing in 2024? Can the Reds go to Hamilton and get the job done?
Oh, look, yeah, they definitely can. It's always possible. I don't think they will. I think it's going to be a close and nail-biting loss. And it will make me continue to be frustrated by the Reds because I really want them to do well. And if they do get the win, I'll be the first one to, well, one of the first ones up there cheering, clapping them on, because God, they are, when they're on, they are so exciting and amazing to watch. And they just seem to have these little storylines of like these epic moments of defensive integrity in big matches that can sometimes go their way. And God, you just love it. You just love it. So I'm hoping for one of those matches this weekend. But that's hope. And as we all know, hope is fleeting at times. And so I think the Chiefs are going to go away with it. But we'll see.
I've got the Reds winning by 2 points with Tom Liner kicking a penalty from 55 metres out.
55!
Just after full time.
Oh,
55 metres out.
Oh, that is the
And Lockie will be dead by that point.
I'm not. I won't survive. I know that I won't survive. If this goes to golden point, catch me 6 feet under. I will have dug the grave myself.
Moving along, we have the Melbourne Rebels playing their first ever quarterfinal in Super Rugby history against the Hurricanes in Wellington. Now, Ando, this is a massive ask for any team to go to Wellington and play the Hurricanes in the form that they are. Artie Savea was seen at training in the last few weeks in a Canes jersey. Rebels fans are hoping and praying that he's not allowed to be named in the 23. Can the Rebels go and cause an upset, trouble the Hurricanes?
God, you just want to believe it, don't you? You just want to believe it, but
it'd be the story, wouldn't it?
Even it would be an incredible narrative and incredible journey for them. It's even more of what I'm feeling about the Chiefs Reds is like they could, but they won't. And I think that a little bit about the Chiefs Reds, but I think that a lot about the Rebels Canes. You look at the Canes results over the season, and they've just far and away been like up there as the best team. And their recent matches, they 41-14 against the Highlanders, beat the Chiefs away from home, pretty handily defeated Moana Pacifica, and then tight loss to the Blues back over kind of the last four matches or so. They are in good form. They're an incredible team, and I don't see the Rebels getting it over the Hurricanes at home in New Zealand. It's just not going to happen in my mind.
Yep. Lockie, anything different in your mind?
Nothing except to say that if the Rebels were to win, it would be the greatest upset in club rugby history. I don't think that's selling it short at all. A team that is about to be set aside for the 2025 season to go to the minor premiers in New Zealand and break a 15-game hoodoo of Australian teams losing finals in Super Rugby hasn't happened. Hasn't happened in the professional era. So for the Rebels to go in the manner with which they've dealt this season to win would be truly remarkable. It would be the story of the year. So I will hope with every bone in my body that they can do it, but the Canes, for me, are just way too classy.
Yeah, that would be a massive upset. It would be incredible to see, but I just don't think the Rebels have it in them, unfortunately. Moving forward, we have the Blues hosting the Drua. That's played 7:05 p.m. local time in Auckland. Ando, do you think the Drua can upset the Blues at Eden Park?
Absolutely not. I think they are the least chance of winning out of any of the three teams we've spoken about so far. The Drua are not good away from home, and they're playing the Blues at Eden Park. Like, that's less chance of winning than the Rebels and the Reds in my mind.
Combined.
I'm not sure if it's combined, but there's less of a chance definitely in this totally vacuous ratios and the like that I'm providing here. But yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they've got really any meaningful chance of winning. It doesn't say anything about how good the Drua can be and have been at points, but away from home against the Blues at Eden Park in its quarterfinal, no.
Lockie, do you see them being able to do anything to trouble this Blues side?
I see them scaring the willies out of them in the first 10 minutes and then comfortably going down by 20 or 30. Just seeing them go down by 36 points to the Highlanders in Dunedin shows you how bad they are on the road, and it's not going to change in a quarterfinal in my book.
Yeah, I'm expecting a big score here from the Blues. Now, the game that everyone in Australia is looking forward to the most.
Big one.
The Brumbies hosting the Highlanders down at GIO Stadium in Canberra. If you are anywhere on the east coast of Australia, make sure you get there and support our Aussie boys up against the Highlanders. This is probably the best. This is, other than the Blues over the Drua, I think this is the most likely chance of the Brumbies winning. I think this is, I haven't been that impressed with the Highlanders these last few weeks. Boys, do you see this going any other way?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance, isn't there? I mean, there's always a chance, and we've kind of said it about the other teams. I recognize that we've kind of said all the Kiwi teams are going to win, and now I'm kind of doubting the Brumbies. But all I'm saying is that, it's different, though, because the Highlanders the Highlanders lost to the Brumbies in the regular season at home, but it was by 6. It was a pretty close match. And the Highlanders are probably one of the best suited teams to be able to play in the winter in Canberra. Mm. So it's not like you're sending the Drua down to Canberra in winter. That would be a death trap for them. and so the elements are going to be less of a factor here. And we know, unfortunately, that the crowd hasn't been able to make as much of a fortress of GIO in terms of the numbers throughout the season. Hopefully that changes for the quarterfinal. And they are able to kind of provide that extra level of home ground advantage. But in saying that, I think the Brumbies are going to win. I just think there is a bit of a chance for a hiccup here. But again, it's the Highlanders. They suck.
Lockie, any thoughts on how this will go?
The Highlanders suck is one of the great analyses that we've been able to provide this season. Because they do. They've been genuinely awful this year. And I feel quite similar to Ando. The Brumbies could have a monumental balls up, but I don't think they will. We've seen that they can win ugly. They can also win big. I either see it being a massive margin or the Brumbies play horribly and still just scrape through.
One thing that I'm a little bit disappointed about by RA is the promotion of this game. Now, granted, it is Monday as we record this Monday evening, but what an initiative that I think would be awesome to see RA pushing would be for any fan of an Australian Super Rugby side that has a membership this year can get into free on Saturday night to support the Brumbies. They should be putting buses from Central in Sydney. They should have a chartered flight down from Brisbane. They should be doing everything they possibly can to pack out GIO Stadium and cheer the Brumbies through home. Because as rugby fans, we want to support our team. We want to support we want to support our players, our national interests on the line here. So it would be great to see GIO full and heaving and a massive crowd there to support the Brumbies. But I just don't see how that's going to happen, seeing that there's hardly any initiatives going for it at this point. Gents, any other final thoughts on the finals or anything else we've spoken about before we finish up for the pod tonight?
Mate, I'm happy. I personally have just enjoyed being back and chatting rugby with you boys. But it's just going to be a good weekend. Good weekend. Can't wait to cheer on the Aussie teams. And hopefully we're going to get some upsets. I would not be more excited to be able to cheer on the Reds or the Rebels and just be so excited about bloody Kiwis losing. So he's hoping we can get a win away in a final series in New Zealand.
One win's great. Two would be incredible. And three would be a spiritual awakening for me. So we can only wait and hope. but yeah, sending all our love to the Aussie teams competing. Let's get it done. I'm sick of losing to the Kiwis. Let's get all three in. Bugger it.
That's all right. Let's get it done. So make sure you are tuning in Friday and Saturday night this coming weekend to support the Aussie teams. As we've said, we've got the, just to wrap up, we've got the Chiefs hosting the Reds on Friday night, the Hurricanes hosting the Rebels on Saturday afternoon, the Blues hosting the Drua on Saturday evening, and then Saturday night, the Brumbies hosting the Highlanders. So make sure you get and watch and support all of those. We'll be back here same time next week to wrap up the results of the quarterfinals. Look forward to the semifinals, and hopefully we'll be talking about three Aussie teams moving forward in the competition. But if not, we'll be here anyway to wrap it all up. Ando, thanks for coming back on the pod. Great to have you. Yeah, Lockie, absolutely. Great to have you as always.
Thanking you, team. And what a pleasure. The full gang back together. Stick with us. We're looking forward to seeing you all next week. Ando, you will be roped in.
We'll see, mate. We'll see. It's been a good one to come back, though. So thanks for having me.
All right. We will be back next week, everyone. Have a good week. See you then. Bye.
Bye.